it contains the supersymmetric solutions, new supersymmetric solutions by using interamagnetic fields in orientiform models. So I start from my motivation. And my motivation is discussion of certain string models. It's by now an old kind of motivation with exotic orientiform planes. Exotic orientiform planes with positive tension, positive charge, most importantly, positive tension. And in which, naively, these kind of constructions ask for supersymmetric breaking for an obvious reason that I'll review in a moment. And then I'll discuss an observation, which I'll use later on, observation which to some extent is not completely crucial, but I'll just to make contact with some other approaches in the literature, in which BPS brains and non-BPS brains in, let's say, type 1 are actually, in some sense, equivalent by turning appropriate internal flux, magnetic flux, on both sides. With this kind of simple observation, I, in the following, discuss models containing only BPS type of brains with internal magnetic fluxes on it and show that you are able to find certain supersymmetric solutions for these kind of models by inducing some negative tensions by internal flux, magnetic fluxes. I'll give an explicit example if I have time and just flash you some prospects. So, first of all, let me just remind you some zoology for those of you which are not familiar with this kind of exotic orientifold. So string theory has all kind of orientifold planes. First of all, you have brain antibrains. I took here example with D95 brains motivated by type 1, but of course you can have various kind of brains in various orientifold constructions. There are all kind of orientifolds. The standard ones which have negative tension, negative charge are these ones. But you have, of course, anti-orientifolds, and most importantly for my talk, there are these exotic orientifolds which have positive tension and positive or negative charge depending on their type. All of these objects, as usually, they preserve individually half of supersymmetry. When you put together, for example, brain anti-brains on brain anti-orientifolds, you break completely supersymmetry. And certain configurations break completely supersymmetry without tachyons, for example, this kind of configurations, which break completely supersymmetry, anti-brains and orientifolds, they break completely supersymmetry without tachyons. In this kind of example, you have supersymmetry, the lowest order in the closed sector, and supersymmetry is broken in the open sector. Actually, you have nonlinear supersymmetry in the realized in the open sector. So, just a cartoon before going on. As you know, a kind of a string model is something like that. It has some orientifolds just to, if you want to have some deep brains which have a positive tension, you need some negative tension objects which are typically the orientifolds. And most importantly, you need to have a Gauss law in a compact space. The sum of the charges coming from deep brains and orientifolds should add up to zero. And for with standard orientifolds, you just add brains and you have supersymmetric solutions. These are the standard supersymmetric orientifolds. Now, there are a large class by now of string constructions containing exotic orientifold planes. So let me just remind you some of them. There is, first of all, a 10-dimensional example, which is based on an alternative orientifold projection containing space-time fermion number, which generates an orientifold, an exotic orientifold, which has positive tension, positive charge. So the only way to get a consistent model is to add anti-brains. This add, you generate a tuple, a Schwarz tuple, where you compensate the Ramon charge. So you get a symplectic gauge group, USP32, rank 16, which breaks completely supersymmetry in the open sector, whereas the supersymmetry is unbroken at lowest order in the closed sector. And again, in the open sector, the supersymmetry does exist, but it's not even realized. You can find orbifold examples. For example, combining in an orbifold, T4 over Z2, the standard orientifold with some specific action, which, for example, is minus one in the twisted sector, you generate an orbifold model which contains standard O9 and D9 10-dimensional objects, whereas you generate an exotic orientifold of positive tension, positive charge, and you are forced to add anti-brains. And for example, the gauge group is something like SO16 times 16, 9 brains, and some symplectic for the anti-5 brains. And a model which would be more closely to what I will talk about later on is some models which are Z2 times Z2 orbifolds. It's or antifolds based on this kind of orbifolds, Z2 times Z2, in which, again, you combine the orientifold projection with some additional action, which I'll call P prime. I'll not explicitly say what it is. And these models can generate, depending on some signs, which are called discrete torsions. I don't need to enter into details here. But typically, these models have standard orientifold O9 planes and standard D9 brains. However, if some of these signs, which are related basically to the three compact ori, are minus, are plus one, you have standard orientifold planes. If they are minus one, you have these exotic orientifold planes. And what we proposed one time ago is that you have to break supersymmetry, I mean anti-phi brains, in order to satisfy the Ramo-Ramo total cancellation. So the question I want to address here, which was addressed already in the literature in a specific context, in particular by this paper, Marchesano and Xu, which they already did suggest that you can find supersymmetric solution of this type, is the question is supersymmetry unavoidable? Is supersymmetry breaking unavoidable in this kind of models with exotic orientifold planes? So again, the naive answer is unavoidable. You have to break supersymmetry because you cannot compensate this positive tension of this orientifolds by adding anti-brains. Brains always have positive tension. However, they suggested in this paper, Marchesano and Xu, they suggested that you can, by putting in thermoelectric fields or by rotating the brains, you can find some supersymmetric solutions. So before I'll enter into the detailed example I'll present here, let me just remind you, it's not the appropriate place here. Already Marchesano talked a little bit about intersecting brains. I just remind you one point would be useful for later on, that when you have these intersecting brain models, or if you want internal magnetic fields, if you have a D brains, you can put internal magnetic fields in three tori, and you will see later on in the talk by Antonio Abis, you can even do something more general. You'll hear from him. And this is still dual, as we know, this is still dual to D brains at angles. And most importantly, there is a Dirac quantization condition in which these magnetic fields are quantized in inverse of the area of the compact tori by some integers which are Landau levels at string theory level. And at string theory level, we have they are replaced by two quantum numbers, which describe, if you want, the wrapping in this dual language, the wrapping of the brain in the two directions of the torus. I'm pretty sure that everybody knows this here. Let me just remind you that typically when you have a construction with, let's say, two stacks of brains, we have an intersection number which, roughly speaking, counts the number of chiral fermions in intersection. And you can, by tuning these angles in the three tori, you have either four supersymmetries, two supersymmetries, one supersymmetry, or even non-supersymmetry at all. In the following, I'll mostly be concentrated on models which preserve one supersymmetry. Now, let me start with an observation, which will allow me to discuss only BPS-type objects with intermagnetic flux. And the observation is that if you have, the observation is the following. As you know, probably in type 1, you can have BPS kind of brains, which are D9, D5, and D1. There are non-BPS brains, all the rest. But in particular, you have non-BPS D3 and D7 brains, which are particular. Let me just remind you what happens if you put intermagnetic fields on, let's say, D9 brains. And I just, here I'm starting with writing the Vesuvino action on, let's say, D9 brains. So these are these quantum numbers, these wrapping numbers N, and the other, which appears somewhere at some point, this is the other wrapping numbers M. The flux is being basically the ratio of these quantum numbers. If you put some magnetic fluxes on D9 brains, you generate, first of all, you have a charge coupling to the 10 form, which gives the charge, Ramo-Ramo charge. But you're also inducing a coupling to the 6 form, so you are inducing a D5 type charges. In the supersymmetric case, we can also give a similar interpretation to the effective tension of the kind of D9 brains, magnetized D9 brains, if you want. You are inducing, in addition to the tension of the D9 brain, some lower dimensional tensions. You cannot have this interpretation if you don't have supersymmetry. The Born-Liefeld action cannot be written in such a simple way. But in a supersymmetric case, in the sum of the angles add up to zero, you are seeing in some induced tensions. In the supersymmetric case, the effective tension matches perfectly the effective charge and give supersymmetric configurations. Now, as I said, the type 1 contain in particular some interesting non-DPS brains, D3 and D7. They are interesting because they are indeed non-DPS and therefore have no Ramoramov charge, but are polarizable in some sense, in the sense that if you put some magnetic fields, fluxes in their wall volume, they acquire charges, and that is simple to see. First of all, let me remind you that, for example, D3 brains, D3 anti-D3 brain type 2, are exchanged by the Orient-Diffold action, basically because the fourth form coupling to D3 brains is odd under the Orient-Diffold projection. And this becomes a kind of a bound state in the type 1. It becomes an object which has no charge, which has a gauge group, which is, if you want, is a diagonal breaking of this UN times UN gauge group of D3 anti-D3 brains. Now, if you add magnetic fluxes, let me do the following thing. Let me tidualize this non-BPS D-brain type 1 six times, such that it becomes a D9 brain. For example, in the talk of Fernando Marquezano, he talked about D9, D9 bar brains. It was in the sense of this original D3, D3 bar in type 2. Again, in type 1, that's a single object, actually. So in the T-dual version, this kind of non-BPS become non-BPS D9 brains. Now we can put some magnetic fluxes. We can put magnetic fluxes and look at the Vesemino action. And what happens is that even this object was uncharged because it's also a non-BPS object. Basically, the Ramon-Ramon charge of the pair Berhanti-Bern is zero. It acquires a coupling to the 4 form and to the 8 form in this T-dual version. When we T-dualize back, what happens is that the interpretation of the non-BPS D3 brain in type 1 induces higher dimensional D5 and D9 charges, so physical couplings to the 10 and to the 6 form. And we can also preserve supersymmetry of the sum of these angles, which are related, as usual, to the fluxes you are adding on these non-BPS brains by this formula. It's equal to pi over 2. Now, it turns out that there is a complete mapping of spectra of D9 brain with magnetic fluxes and the non-BPS D3 brain with appropriately mapped magnetic fluxes. Basically, if you have a D9 brain with fluxes HI in the three tori, if you consider a D3 brain, which is non-BPS in principle, by adding the inverse of these fluxes, you are exchanging the wrapping numbers for D9 and the D3, and you are relating the angles of the D9 brains, the rotation angle of D9 brains, with the rotation angle of D3 brains by this expansion from just containing additional pi over 2 rotations, the spectra of D9 and D3 becomes exactly the same. If you wonder, the reason is probably very simple. If you add magnetic fluxes, you erase the difference between BPS and non-BPS brains. They become basically similar objects. So you can have a simple map between the spectra. So because of this, I'll consider in the following only, if you want, BPS brains with internal magnetic fluxes, because if you consider non-BPS ones, you can always find a map equivalent BPS brain with the same spectrum, and which preserve the same supersymmetry. So now, the next observation is that, so let's consider only DPS brains, D9 brains, magnetized, and a certain stacks of them, several stacks, and then their number is MA, with certain fluxes. So there is an index now in this, concerning various stacks, and the index I is the three, index of the three internal tori. So you impose a supersymmetry condition on each stack because you want to have vacuum upstream series. So these are complete solutions, imposing all the conditions of string constructions that are purely perturbative, actually. We wrote down explicitly all the string propagation, all the partition function, and checked all the consistency checks, standard consistency checks. And you impose supersymmetry condition on each stack. This reflects a nonlinear condition on these magnetic fields like that. And the simple observation, which is already made by several people, is that at least one magnetic field, if you want to satisfy this condition, one of the at least one magnetic field has to be negative. And therefore, if you look at the effective tension, which I wrote slightly earlier on, you realize that starting with the D9 brain and putting magnetic fluxes, at least, not at least, one induced tension will be negative, whereas the two others are will be positive. for example, if you have three magnetic fields like that, two positive, one negative, such that they satisfy this condition, then the induced tensions will be two positive and one, the third will be negative. So these allow, in principle, the possibility of compensating exotic or antifold planes tension charges by magnetic induced ones. However, as I will show in a moment, tadpole conditions and supersymmetry put severe restrictions on this kind of new solutions. So again, we are using only D9 brains, standard D9 brains with fluxes here in type 1. So without entering into details, I wrote here, you are not forced to follow the details, which are actually very simple, but I wrote here the some of the, first of all, I wrote here the Ramo-Ramo tadpole conditions, which are the first one is the D9-09 tadpole condition, basically the sum of the number of the brains should be equal to the charge of the O9 planes. And here is the same for the three type orientifold planes, which you could have if you are doing an orbifold construction. So here I'm using a compact notation in which, for example, toroidal compactification has all these numbers equal to zero because we don't have orientifold five planes. For the Z2 orbifold, one of these numbers is equal to plus or minus one, depending on which type of orientifold, normal or exotic orientifold plane you have. And for Z2 times Z2 orbifold, which actually will be the example I'll give in the following, these numbers are plus or minus one, and depend on the orientifold action, if you want, in the twisted sector, to distinguish between different models. Now, it's very easy by combining this equation to see that for small magnetic fields, you have a very simple constraints. First of all, you cannot have supersymmetric toroidal compactification. It's just impossible. However, you'll see in a moment in the talk by Antoniani that if you generalize these constructions, you can have even toroidal constructions. You cannot have, in the example I'm giving you here with just these three magnetic fields in three different tori, you cannot solve neither the Z2 orbifold with exotic orientifold planes. We cannot solve the, that's Z2 times Z2, with all exotic orientifold planes. You cannot solve it either. However, you can solve the one of the models so-called with discrete torsion, which contain one exotic orientifold planes. It can be solved if the first volume is bigger than the sum of the second and the third. It's just a trivial consequence of this relation. You can perform a similar analysis just combining the equations in the case of large magnetic fields. So let me just say again, you combine this equation with the supersymmetry conditions on each stack of brains in order to find these simple results. For large magnetic fields, similar constraints appear. Again, you cannot have any toroidal example because it's incompatible with supersymmetry. And the last point, which will be very important in the explicit example I gave you, that the same phenomenon of inducing lower dimensional tensions and charges by the magnetic fields holds in the twisted sector. In this example I'll give in a moment with Z2 times Z2, which I'm not into details, of course, in the twisted sectors, in the absolute magnetic fields, the twisted Ramo-Ramo tadpole conditions ask for a certain for a certain number of brains, if you want, for a certain action of the orbifold on the Chan-Patton factors, if you want. In the case that you add magnetic fields, you have new conditions, and the new conditions can be easily seen to arise. Just to give an example, and now I'm really talking about Z2 times Z2, even if this kind of new tadpole conditions for induced by magnetic fields are more general, obviously, in the twisted sector. So, and the point is that in this particular case, the magnetic fields induce tadpoles for twisted Ramo-Ramo forms. So let me consider a twisted sector in this case. Basically, you start Vesomino action for the twisted fields now, which are six-dimensional fields, but the six-dimensional Ramo-Ramo fields do feel the magnetic field in the corresponding torus. And even if originally you had no coupling to the six-dimensional Ramo-Ramo fields, you do induce by this magnetic field a physical coupling to the twisted four forms. So you get the new conditions, basically the sum of the fluxes times the number of stacks of these brains should up to zero. That's a twisted Ramo-Ramo tadpole condition, which is induced by a magnetic field. And that's very important, of course, in order to get consistent models, as usually. So again, I'm not attend into details, but what we are doing is completely perturbative. So we wrote complete string propagation, check the spin statistics, the open sector, the spin propagation, the open string one loop amplitudes, the open cosmic duality, the complete factorization in the three-level channel, gravitational channel of the amplitude, which has to be consistent. And I'll just flash you the results actually in the and say flash one comment. So as usual in this kind of models, it's useful to define these intersection numbers. That's the intersection number. That's the intersection number between the stack A and stack B of brains, which is the usual definition. Because of the orientifold, we have the intersection number between the brain A and the image of the brain B, as usual, the image with respect to the orientifold plane. And also, we have a kind of intersection, in some sense, of the stack A and a certain orientifold planes, given by a certain combination of fluxes, in which these numbers, epsilon 1, epsilon 2, epsilon 3, which tell you which kind of orientifold planes we have, or 5. If it's 1, it's a standard orientifold plane. If it's minus 1, it's an exotic orientifold plane, enter into this intersection number. And we are at brains and orbifold fixed points. And if you want, the reason is that if you want to be sure that you have a new supersymmetric solutions, the supersymmetry is broken if you have anti-brain coincident with the orientifold planes. If they are far apart from each other, for example, if you add the bulk kind of brain, which are not at the fixed points, the three-level spectrum is supersymmetric, of course, even if you have anti-brain and orientifold. So you have to add brains at the orbifold fixed points. That's why you have new twisted tuple conditions appear here. And this has also, as Fernando Marquezana also emphasized this morning, this also is a nice feature. It removes the adjoint chiral multiples from the massless spectrum, technically speaking, because if you have brains at the orbifold fixed points, the orbifold has a non-trivial action on the Chan Platon factor of the brains. So you are projecting out a lot of states, in particular the chiral adjoints in the spectrum. Let me flash you. I don't necessarily mean that you are forced to understand, to follow the spectra. The spectra in this case, as I said, it's a unitary. It's some unitary gauge groups. You don't have adjoints you do not have chirals in the adjoint representation. You have basically by fundamental symmetric, anti-symmetric, with certain multiplicities, and you can show for an arbitrary fluxes if you want that this spectrum is free of any kind of irreducible anomalies, precisely when untwisted total conditions are satisfied. So I'll just give you one example. It's an example which is, I think, is not bad from a phenomenological viewpoint. However, I'll not discuss in detail the phenomenology because we didn't really analyze the phenomenology in detail. The example has three stacks, and it has, as you see here, it has some negative fluxes which induce some negative tension. So these examples contain, first of all, only the 9 brains. So even if it's an orbifold, so even if you have orientifold 5 planes, you don't have here 5 brains. You have only D9 brains, which have negative fluxes, which induce some negative tensions. And this negative tension take care of the exotic orientifold plane charge, which is present here. So this is a supersymmetric model. The supersymmetric model, as I said, satisfies all kind of constraints of a perturbative string construction. The gauge group is a copy of the 2 standard model gauge group times 2 U1s, which has 4 generations of quark and leptons and 8 fixed multiplets. And I'm not discussing it here in detail. You can go to the standard model gauge group if, for example, there are bifundamentals in this case, bifundamentals of this U3, of the first U3 with the second U3, the first U2 with the second U2. If you give waves to the bifundamental fields, you break the gauge group down to the standard model gauge group. I will not discuss this in detail because we didn't analyze in detail the resulting model. It's a model which has 4 generations, which is pretty close to a standard model, MSSM type. Not exactly, we still have some exotics. So let me finish with some prospects. So, first of all, the new supersymmetric orientifolds I presented to you have some nice features because they have no chirals in the adjoint representation. If you want, most of the paper discussed, most of the papers, starting basically with a paper in 2001, I think, Vetic Shu Ranga discussing models of Z2 times Z2 with intersecting brains are based on the simplest kind of orientifold Z2 times Z2, so-called without discrete torsion, in which the orbifold has no action actually on the Chan pattern factors. Because of this, you always have chiral adjoints in the master spectrum. Here, because you have a non-trivial action, it's more easy to generate chirality. You can remove this chiral in the adjoint representation. You can also avoid strong coupling regime for standard model gauge couplings, just because without having these chirals in the master spectrum, the gauge couplings remain perturbative typically, but that's a model dependent statement, depends really on the model. I think that more construction of this type would be desirable for quasi realistic models. What I have in mind is to, first of all, consider example with different kind of negative induced tensions. Secondly, to consider other kind of orbifolds, not necessarily Z2 times Z2, a similar kind of puzzle of non-supersymmetric models because of the exotic orientifold planes exist for other models, other kind of orbifolds. Now, that's more speculative, because this kind of constructions contain only D9 brains. It's not impossible to think of possible heterotic duals, because you basically have only D9 brains which have a mapping in heterotic side. Then you can also combine this kind of approach with three-form fluxes, and you saw the talk this morning of Fernando Marchesano, and there is a really nice paper on this subject. And I think an open question, which is for me puzzling for years, is that if there is a continuous connection between the supersymmetric and non-supersymmetric solutions of the same model. So again, in this particular example I gave you, the orientifold, so the orbifold and the orientifold projection, which completely fixes the closed sector, is the same and has, again, two solutions, a supersymmetric solution and a non-supersymmetric solution. And it doesn't seem at first sight to be any continuous connection between the two solutions. So somehow, a non-supersymmetric solution doesn't seem to have its end point, if you want, of some instability, the supersymmetric solution. Now, if there is any connection between a supersymmetric and a non-supersymmetric solution of the same model, of the same orientifold model, if you want, it's still an open question, I think, and it's a very interesting one. Thank you.
Questions or comments?
I'm sorry. There are no adjoints. No. Yes, there are exotic representations. The model is not exactly MSSM. There are some exotics. Has has four generations. Of course, in leptons, it has eight fixed doublets. So we didn't discuss it in all details. It has eight fixed doublets. It's not the most economical one, but we didn't really try so hard to get. It was not the main purpose. So I would suspect that it's easier to do better. How better? How much better is not clear. We can certainly do better.
Even fast, no?